I'm Gene Robinson. I am the ninth bishop of New Hampshire for the Episcopal Church. I retired about 2.5 years ago, and I'm currently working as a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C., a think tank founded by John Podesta in 2003.
I'm Tim Safford. I'm the rector or pastor here at Christ Church. I'm the 19th rector of Christ Church, which started here in 1695. And as always, it's an honor to have Bishop Robinson here at this temple of democracy for which we all have so much to be grateful for on a day like today and a weekend like this one. Keep going.
You're good. I think you got it.
Well, I know that I'm supposed to ask a couple questions, and you're supposed to be brilliant. So I will I'm going to go back and just...
That's a much harder job for me than it is for you.
I'm just going to go back and tread a little of the ground which we just treaded. Sure. Is last Friday was a great moment, not just for marriage, but for the dignity of human beings in this country and our LGBT brothers and sisters, of which the Episcopal Church and Christ Church has been struggling for so long. But you have reminded us so especially that unless we are... If any of us are suffering oppression or discrimination, we really, in a sense, still are. And at the time after Charleston, after the terrible brutality incidents, like you were saying, in Ferguson, and the ongoing discrimination laws, both in the African-American community and for LGBT communities, we can't take our foot off the gas pedal. And further, those of us who have been so dedicated to the LGBT cause maybe need to be more in touch with the realities of what's happening among our African-American brothers and sisters related to race and class.
You know, I think while this is clearly a celebratory moment for the LGBT community, I mean, this gay marriage thing is really quite astounding. I mean, remember, it was only 12 years ago in 2003 that the sodomy laws were declared unconstitutional. And here we are 12 years later welcoming gay and lesbian couples into the institution of marriage. So there's a lot to celebrate. But I think the real question for the LGBT community, or at least the kind of judgment that I believe is fair to make of us, is whether or not we will use this moment of forward momentum to begin fighting for justice for all, not justice just for us, right? And, you know, we have a whole lot of people in this country for whom America is not yet welcoming or affirming. Clearly for African Americans who have this horrendous history of slavery, I mean, the evil done to them is almost indescribable. And the remnants of that are continuing to cripple African Americans. But we also have got, you know, we have immigrants in this country, both documented and undocumented. We've got dreamers who live in fear that their families will be torn apart by deportation. You know, just as our families are now protected by the gay marriage thing, are we going to fight for other kinds of families, like families that may be literally pulled apart by deportation? We've got people who live in wheelchairs. We've got people who live in poverty. There are all kinds of people at the margins. And I think the moral question for the LGBT community is, are we going to use our experience of oppression as a tiny window into what it must be like to be black or Hispanic or undocumented or handicapped or poor in America? Are we going to use it as a way of understanding the oppressions that come for those kinds of folks and then throw our weight behind them? We have been unbelievably successful, and I will go out on a limb here and say I think one of the reasons this has happened so fast is that our movement has been largely propelled forward by white gay men, and their whiteness and their maleness is the key, one of the keys to our success. It's not to say that a lot of other people haven't done a lot of hard work, but I think we have to own up to the fact that the public face of the LGBT movement is the white gay man who's arguing with his partner about where to go for brunch on Sunday.
When after church.
After, of course, after church. But the more typical LGBT situation are two African-American lesbians raising three children at or below the poverty level in Mississippi, right? Mm-hmm. And so we've just got to pay attention to the ways in which all of those oppressions intersect with one another. And I think, as I say, the moral question is whether we're going to throw our weight behind that or not.
So, Gene, you're back in Christchurch. I think it's your third or fourth time here, at least in my tenure here, and I know you're a longtime friend of Philadelphia. And in the year of your consecration, you came and spoke at the interfaith service put on here by the Equality Forum, the organization that fights for LGBT civil rights for across the nation, but it's centered here in Philadelphia. And you've returned because the Equality Forum is having its 50th anniversary, and the 50th anniversary of the celebration of LGBT civil rights. So here in just this 1 week of a great LGBT civil rights triumph, talk about why this service of Thanksgiving, and it's an interfaith service of Thanksgiving, is important for everybody who's in Philadelphia this weekend and for all of us who are patriotic and into our rights.
You know, one of the things that frightens me and disappoints me about the LGBT community is that, by and large, we are ignorant of our own history. And so one of the things that I think the Equality Forum's remembrances of this march that sounds like was the first public demonstration for homosexual rights in America. It took place, of course, in front of Independence Hall in 1965. Now, that was 4 years before Stonewall.
Yeah.
And I have a very personal connection to this. One of the people who marched that day, July 4th, 1965, was a UCC minister who marched in his clerical collar in 1965 for homosexual rights. Astounding.
Yeah.
That man is now 92 years old and is in a nursing home in Concord, New Hampshire, which is where my office was when I was Bishop of New Hampshire. So I know Robert Wood, and he would be here today if his health permitted it. But it's people like him, whose names most people don't know, who actually got us to where we are. People have this notion that we got to marriage equality in the last 10 years. Well, you know what? A lot of people have been doing heroic, courageous work for 40, 50, 60 years. And what I love about the Equality Forum is that it remembers those early gay pioneers who you know, were working for our rights when it was, not only was it not popular, it was just damn dangerous.
Right, it must have been dangerous to march on July 4th, 1965, in front of Independence Hall for gay rights. And that's so much more of a public and engagement with governmental institutional issue as opposed to the tragic and incendiary events that happened at Stonewall. But that was a very public moment.
It was.
Yeah.
You know, here's what it reminds me of. Slave owners in the South gave Bibles to their slaves, thinking it would keep them passive and quiet and sort of resigned to their lot in life. The problem was they read those Bibles, right? And in it, in those Bibles, they saw their own liberation. They saw their equality before God. They saw their dignity before God. And of course, they're still fighting for it. I think one of the things about the LGBT movement, and certainly was true of that earliest march in 1965 here in Philadelphia, was we actually read the Constitution, right? And believed it.
Yeah.
So you best be careful what you write down and then place in the hands of oppressed people, because they very well may find the seeds of their own liberation.
The man who contributed the words, "we the people," to the Constitution is buried right beneath your feet.
Wow, and this is holy ground.
It's holy ground in many ways. And just even that phrase, "we the people," becomes more and more poignant to me as every year goes by.
You know, and this service, in just a couple of hours, I will be standing over the grave of
William White,
who was the number two bishop in the American succession, and I am the 993rd bishop in that succession. Mm-hmm. So there's a real, so he laid hands on someone who laid hands on someone, and continuing all the way down to the people who laid hands on me. It's a very special connection.
And his great legacy, of course, William White's legacy, is that he insisted that the way a bishop be chosen would be not imposed by our hierarchy, but it would rise democratically from the people, and the people would choose their bishops. And indeed, that was what was so powerful about your election. It was your people chose you, and no one was going to take that from the people of New Hampshire or the Episcopal Church in the United States. And what I think about every time you're standing on William White is he could not even have imagined that.
Right.
What can't you imagine today about the future of liberation, both race, class, LGBT?
You know, I think every generation is blind to what's going to come next. And clearly, 12 years ago, I would not have predicted that we would have marriage equality in the country, or, as we've just this past week, welcomed LGBT, or at least gay and lesbian couples, into the institution of marriage in the Episcopal Church. I wasn't sure I would live to see it. So it's really hard to give a prognosis, but here's what I hope for, is that we will become ever more committed to righting the wrongs that this country perpetuates. We need to go back to the Constitution, which was hammered out here in Philadelphia, and actually pay attention to those words. You know, there are people who are left out of this society in increasing numbers, and we will not be the country we were envisioned to be until we actually speak to their needs. So, but I look forward to the first gay president, the first transgender president, or maybe it would be a gay president and a transgender vice president. Well, let's go for that.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is it'll come sooner than we think. You know, Harvey Milk, the slain civil rights leader for gay folks in California, in the 70s said that coming out was the most political act you could do, because when people actually come to know us, then they want us to be treated fairly. And so I think as transgender people get more and more visible, we know more and more of their stories. That, too, is going to take a real leap forward in terms of acceptance.
Now, one thing I know that many people have been working hard on is lights are going to go on tonight, and Christ Church is going to light up like a rainbow, vaguely. But we also want you to drop some rainbow colors out of these top windows so that all of Christ Church, as everybody arrives for the service today,
fantastic.
We'll see the rainbow flag across Philadelphia's oldest, greatest, still-standing colonial structure.
You know, when marriage equality passed and the president made the decision to light up the White House, I mean, you think it's, on the one hand, it's just sort of a tacky idea. I can't tell you how moved I was by it, and all the LGBT people I know were just sort of dumbstruck by the outrageous celebration that signaled. And so having the rainbow colors hanging from old historic Christ Church is just an astounding thing as we try to live more and more into the church and the Constitution, which really started here.
Well, with that, I think you get to hang them out the window.
Awesome. I'm ready.